Welcome to the Cloud Computing Roundtable. My name is Gary Orenstein. This podcast is hopefully the start of a continuing tradition of gathering experts to discuss data center technology and trends. And the recent explosion around cloud computing was the final push for us to get started and get together. So we've tentatively titled this podcast the Cloud Computing Roundtable, but we may change the title as the program evolves. But the cloud computing angle gives us the opportunity to discuss trends both in the enterprise and internet data centers, and the impact of cloud computing on consumers. So in a sense, we'll be able to touch both ends of the cloud. With that said, I'd like to introduce the roundtable participants. First, my name is Gary Orenstein, and I'm the Vice President of Marketing at Gear 6. Joining me as co-host today is Steve Norell, CTO of Tech Validate, and a former industry analyst covering storage and data center activities. And today we have two industry guests, both of whom touch cloud computing in their companies in different ways. Edward Capdeville is the Vice President of Marketing at Nervonix, and Jim Herbold is the Enterprise General Manager at Box.net. So welcome, guys. Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
I think I'd like to start by just doing some basic definitions and asking, you know, what is cloud computing from our own perspective? So if anybody wants to jump in.
Sure. I'll jump in first, and I'm sure all of these participants will dogpile on. But to me, I mean, cloud computing, the first thing you have to kind of understand is that it's not a revolution, it's actually an evolution. That it represents something that's been happening over the last decade or so, where, you know, if you think back to the dot-com boom, we had ASPs and people were trying to host single-tenant applications over the internet. That quickly moved to multi-tenant applications like Salesforce, et cetera, and being kind of the second wave. And now where we're at, and what people have really truly dubbed the cloud, is that we're into a kind of a tinker toy model of services and building blocks that people can cobble together or put together and integrate together to create applications. And so what I think is the game changer from a cloud computing perspective is that, A, this is obviously the natural evolution of how software gets delivered, at least in my opinion, but also the software industry is kind of changing from a traditional kind of packaged app model to truly being this kind of supply chain, which looks a lot more like the financial services industries and others, where if you're an application provider, you may have a storage provider, a compute provider, and all of these other people that are providing parts of your application, and you've got this true supply chain that you're really managing, not just you being this vertically integrated application. And so I think that, to me, is the game changer in what really defines cloud computing.
So from your perspective, Steve, you see cloud computing less as delivering an application over the cloud and more as being able to architect specific applications for specific uses that get built in the cloud and delivered over the cloud.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going. It's reusable services, whether they be infrastructure or business.
On that level, I tend to look at things as an IT outsourcing model. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, especially from a customer perspective, you know, a company that wants to get data out in the cloud, they're using services that allow them to outsource things that they've traditionally done in-house, especially with storage.
Right. I would agree with that. I think I would add a classification of the things that are out there from a cloud storage perspective. I think there's a group called the raw components group. There's a processing, storage, raw services offering out there. There's a second bucket that is more the storage as a service led by Salesforce.com. And then there's a third bucket, which is more the webtop or abstraction of the desktop group, which is trying to replicate the desktop experience. The first group, obviously, is led by Amazon with distinct resources in the cloud. The second I mentioned, Salesforce, is allowing business processes to be implemented in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of startups covering the webtop model. I would add to the comment about evolutionary versus disruptive. There's a couple of disruptive elements, I think, even though I do agree that it's more of an evolutionary phase. One is disruptive model is the or aspect is the cost structure changes dramatically.
Absolutely.
And the second thing that changes dramatically is the consumption model, where we used to sell enterprise software with licenses and upfront cost. The model changes dramatically to recurring revenue, demos out there, less of a salesperson, you know, high paid salesperson in the front, but more of a SEO, SEM type of initiative.
Yeah, I really agree with the disruptive aspect of what you're talking about, Edgard. What I'm seeing in the business that I work with, Box.net, is really grassroots adoption of tools that are out in the cloud. And teams are using these tools because they need to do things fast to do well in their business. And it allows people to make snap decisions with credit cards, to get services that way, to get them through a browser, to not go through the traditional channels of approval that IT has in place. Mm-hmm. And I think the big challenge for companies these days who deliver services that take advantage of the cloud, or companies that want to get into the cloud, is really sort of bridging that gap between what end users, frontline business people, might want to do versus what IT needs to do for a company to protect data. So that's really where the resolution in the next 1 to 2 years, I think, really is going to occur, to bridge those two different interests that we see today.
I think there's no question that for the foreseeable future, companies are going to spend more and more money as getting applications that are delivered from outside the corporation, mm-hmm. than they are going to be buying and installing licenses inside the corporation. I think that's pretty much a done deal over the next 5 or 10 years. And it's interesting, sort of what's the impact of that, and how does that take place? The other thing that thought you triggered, Jim, is that in some ways this is similar to the introduction of new technologies to corporations at the departmental level.
Sure.
A lot of things sneak their way in at the departmental level, not necessarily inside the glass house of the core data center, because sure. of the lengthy approval processes and the time it takes and the cost of implementing those solutions. So things that have worked their way in from the edge,
right.
sometimes all of a sudden, people will wake up one day and go, holy mackerel, we're spending all this money on software as a service and getting more for it. Mm-hmm. Why are we spending all this stuff building and architecting it ourselves?
And I think that's what changes the consumption model. You go from calling a rep or reading a IDC report to trying a demo online with your credit card, making a very quick decision, doing your own comparison without anybody in front of you trying to guide you through that comparison.
Yeah. Jim, you've done a lot of that work yourself.
Absolutely. About 1 month ago, we implemented a trial account that you can sign up for on our website. Give us your credit card. You're in the trial. And the tool, this is where sort of cloud computing and Web 2.0 and Enterprise 2.0 kind of all merge, is that, the tool that we offer, it puts a high premium on flexibility, extreme usability. It doesn't require a training session. We still pursue a seat-based license model, where we charge based on the number of users in the application. But each user is going to the browser to take advantage of the file storage and sharing services we have, and we don't particularly need to. We talk to a fair number of them, but a fair number of them also just come in and get up and running completely on their own without interacting with, a member of my sales team.
Yeah. I think an interesting kind of repercussion of all this cloud computing is that ultimately it drives enterprise class capabilities farther down into the medium sized and smaller businesses. It gives them, essentially, it's democratizing some of the things that traditionally only a large company would normally have in their data center. Now you can essentially get that via the internet and via essentially outsourcing it to a third party that does it in kind of the best in class manner. And that is pretty game changing. Both it plays into all of the pricing model types of things that we're having in the delivery model.
I think it's also why a lot of big companies are starting to pay attention to cloud computing, because they realize, over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of technology advances have really begun with the folks who adopt the newest stuff the quickest, and that's the smaller companies, yep. the startups, who are more comfortable with adapting themselves to new methods, new technologies. But I think that there is a fundamental appreciation happening across the many, many different industries that you got to move fast, you got to be on your game with technology. It really can make you more efficient. And when big companies see little companies doing that, they want to understand what's going on there and why those tools are being taken advantage of. It's absolutely happening right now.
Yeah, to that, to your point, I came back from the Salesforce.com user conference recently, and they were announcing Merrill Lynch signing up on Salesforce, and all of these hundreds of thousand employee organization. So it's absolutely, you know, impacting, you know, the corporate glasshouse IT people all the way down to, you know, five guys in essentially a garage.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this started to crystallize over the last couple of months. There was a big story in Business Week in December of 2007 about Google and the wisdom of clouds. Of course, in that context, there was a lot of discussion about Amazon and Microsoft and Yahoo and the web giants and thinking of cloud computing from that perspective, where basically you're reaching across the cloud to some giant internet data center and doing all your computing and storing and whatever you need there. The only thing you have on your side is a browser. But then over the last couple of months in 2008, we've seen announcements from EMC. They did their Mozy acquisition. They recently did an acquisition of Pi Corporation that's still a little bit quiet in terms of their technology. They announced that they're going to be delivering flavors of SAP software. IBM has done a cloud computing announcement that we've, you know, Amazon has continued to be in the news, often positive, occasionally negative. They did have that outage recently, but, you know, it just, actually, that's a good segue to, you know, what has to happen, I think, to carry cloud computing forward, because I think everybody in the industry sees it as a good endeavor. You know, we can't yet say it's bulletproof. You know, if Amazon's having trouble and they've got to be one of the best in the business, you know, others are going to be in the same, you know, risk zone. So what are the things that have to happen for people to adopt more of this type of model? Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
I definitely have some thoughts on that. I think service level agreements are something that lots of cloud computing providers have shied away from, just given the newness of things. That cat's out of the bag. You're really going to have to, you know, put your money where your mouth is in terms of delivering services. That I think is the key piece for, especially when if you're some company's trying to bridge the gap between, you know, sort of grassroots adoption with frontline employees versus IT provisioning. The really big deals are when you know, bottom down sales, you get IT people to embrace it. Service level agreements are, you know, very, very useful there. Typically, those things haven't been an issue.
From the Nirvanix perspective, I think we are strong believers that as you move into a cloud computing world, service providers or cloud computing providers need to have the right architecture for cloud computing. You cannot allow a truck crashing into one of your data centers or some storm somewhere or some blackout somewhere taking data down for thousands of your customers. The right architecture for cloud computing would allow multiple failures anywhere. Sure. And I think from a Nirvanix perspective, we're proud that, you know, half of the country could go down from a blackout or whatever, God forbid, but we would be up and all of our customers would be up. And I think that's extremely important. Infrastructure has to be reliable, available, scalable, and performing well.
I mean, I would agree with all the points. SLA is reliability. I think the other point is that, you know, people have to ultimately believe in the security of the provider. That's clear. The other issue that I keep seeing on the horizon that's coming up both from an industry perspective and there's been some talk about is just data portability. You know, if you're going to store your data, whether you're a storage service provider or even like guys like Salesforce, whoever, you're putting some data in this service, how, you know, what's the relationship? Can you get it back? How, you know, what are the kind of controls that the user has around that becomes a key kind of battleground that is very different from the traditional model. And, you know, you've seen the dataportability.org groups come to fore, but there's been a lot of controversy around, you know, whether to join that and things like that.
I think we saw a similar evolution personally and with the photo sites. The initial photo sites were, you know, send us your photos if you want them back. You know, you got to buy a CD or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a very one-way direction, whereas now all the new photo sites are upload to your heart's content and download to your heart's content. And I think we're going to see that, like you said, with how open is this? It's another interesting point about security and customer concerns. There was an article I was reading recently, started out talking a lot about Salesforce.com, obviously one of the bellwethers in software as a service, but also talking about Workday, which is the new startup by Dave Duffield, the former founder and CEO of PeopleSoft. And one of the things that they commented on was they've been very successful in getting customers to deploy some of the HR-related aspects of their applications that are delivered in a cloud computing format. They have yet to be as successful in getting customers to deploy some of the financial applications. And I don't know whether that's so much a question of security and security concerns, or the fact that, you know, every company by necessity has had to have a very robust financial solution in place, and so you're not necessarily going to just turn that off one day and flip on to Workday or whomever is providing some online service.
Yeah, but, you know, by means of an example, before Box.net, I was with a $40 million a year company who used NetSuite for financial data. It was accessible over the web, and it was on their servers, not our servers. So, you know, it's not an unproven model what Mr. Duffield's trying to do. And that company went public, so it's okay. So.
And I think Amazon and Mark Benioff at Salesforce are all pushing for not reinventing the wheel. It took them a long time to invent a wheel, and none of their customers should spend that similar amount of capital and effort reinventing the wheel. And I think that the most conservative companies or companies in general start with the outsourcing theme from the outer layers of the onion. So, for example, at Nervonix, when companies trust us with their data, they usually start giving us tier 4, tier 3 data if they're, you know, or larger companies that categorize that data that way. But it starts with tier 3, tier 4 data, and eventually gets to tier 1. Newer companies, companies that have Web 2.0 content, pictures, videos, those companies are more risk. They don't mind the risk that much, and they use us for primary data.
I mean, I think just if you look at the cloud computing adoption from a customer size of business perspective, it's kind of an interesting stratification, because the large guys are generally not the early movers here from what I've seen, because they, as to your point, they've already invested in a lot of the infrastructure, so it's going to be a lot harder for them to move. There are exceptions like the Merrill Lynch that I was mentioning, but what you've seen is there's a whole generation of startups that have, let's say, just from the year 99, 2000, et cetera, that have now grown up. They're real public companies. They have $100 million revenues, and they are huge, voracious consumers of cloud computing, whether it be Salesforce or any of these applications, NetSuites, et cetera. And, you know, if you talk to them, they're absolutely, they're bought into trusting a provider with their data, whether it be financial or HR or anything. And so, to me, it's almost the how long that company's been in business is maybe the biggest determinant of whether they will go to cloud computing, because there is just an absolute willingness now to outsource anything when you're starting a business, et cetera, versus, you know, if you're HP, you're probably not quite ready to move, or any large company for that matter, to completely hosted outsourced infrastructure. You're going to put a toe in the water very at the periphery.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of small companies outsource their email. We use an exchange provider. We don't run our own exchange server. And depending on who you ask in a company, I suspect there's a lot more people who'd be concerned about email security than about, you know, some financial number that's on the books. So, you know, I think the mindset is there. It's maybe just more perception about which application belongs where and how much of a pain is it to run it internally versus how easy is it to just sign up for something that's available over the internet. So, you know, I talked a lot about, you know, some of the companies and the activities. There was an interesting thing just yesterday, IBM announcing a new mainframe that's the equivalent of 1,500 OneU servers, and positioning that, I think it's called the Z10, as a way to deliver cloud computing. A number of startups that seem to come up frequently with web searches. I don't know a lot about them, but Cloudo, Joyen, iCloud, Moso, and just tons of stuff happening in different arenas. So we'll have to keep a look and monitor the ones that are rising to the top of the pack there. But at this point, I wanted to take a little shift now and go more into our industry guests today and have them spend a little time with a brief overview of their respective companies and sort of the fit with cloud computing and how each of you see the evolution moving forward. So, Edgar, let's start with you and Nervonix. Give us a quick one-minute overview and then just some of your thoughts and on the industry and where things are headed.
Sure. Nervonix offers a network of online storage nodes These nodes are placed around the globe, and we call that our storage delivery network. We connect and provide a cloud storage platform to applications and businesses. And the idea here is to maximize the utility of this data. We protect this data. We serve this data, upload it, and download it to the respective applications and users from the closest location around the globe. From an industry dynamics perspective, I think you'll see Nervonix as the confluence of traditional storage, a little bit of the CDN trends around content delivery and content protection, and also the services theme. So the confluence of those three themes is what the storage delivery network is. So businesses that want to store data in the cloud at a disruptive cost structure, maximizing experience around the delivery of that content around the world, and you know, ensuring that content will be there, available everywhere, regardless of what's going on with power, Nervonix infrastructure, trust Nervonix with our storage, and we maximize that application value.
Now, understandably, there are a couple of different companies providing these kind of services. What are some of the things that put Nervonix ahead? And I recall early in some of your materials, some of the processing that you do around the media files, is that still a big part of the offering?
Absolutely. Let me talk a little bit about what makes Nervonix different. One of the things that makes Nervonix really different is that, you know, you can see this in the traditional storage industry. Years ago, when you were an application was dealing with data, it had to know a lot about its disks. How many copies of the data do I have in how many disks? Where are these copies? Sectors, cylinders, all this was abstracted eventually by the OS. We're doing something very, very similar for the cloud. If you approach a version one online storage provider, you would see that the application is the one who has to manage where this data is, how many copies of this data exist, is this data being served, uploaded, or downloaded from the proper location. What we provide is a global network of or a cluster of storage nodes that abstract all this logic from the application. So the application, all it sees is a storage API that looks very much like a file system. Every application in the world is expected to talk to a file system, so that's what an API looks like. And from then on, in terms of how many copies of this data are or in what virtual disk, which in this case would be a node around the globe, these data resides in, it's all a policy-based feature that is managed through a portal. So we believe that we built Nervonix to, you know, with the architecture or the right cloud computing architecture in mind. A second differentiation point, as you mentioned, Gary, is the processing. So we do, we add to the file system API a lot of media processing capabilities, the ability to transcode videos, resize pictures, rotate them, flip them, do file system-based search. A lot of these things allow our customers not to set up encoders, decoders, search engines, indexing engines. We do all of this for them.
So as an example, if I want to start Gary's video site and have people post videos, but then want to deliver those videos in multiple video formats,
absolutely,
Nervonix would handle that.
So Gary would create an application, and one of Gary's users would upload a video from, say, Hong Kong. All of a sudden, this video would become very popular in the U.S. It was uploaded in Hong Kong, and you know, with your high-def movie, film machine, and it would be delivered in the U.S. It could be delivered in the U.S. to thousands of users at a very good performance in a format that is viewable with our cell phones. So all this transcoding, the media processing, but also the underlying content delivery piece is handled by the storage, the cloud storage platform, in this case, Nervonix.
And Edward, what's ahead for Nervonix in 2008 in terms of the big things, in terms of growing the business? What's going to happen with Nervonix that you can share with us, and also just in the industry that you think is going to be relevant to you growing the business?
Yeah, so Nervonix strategy for this upcoming year. We've been working a lot in creating an extremely intuitive API, a set of applications that people can download immediately and test and see that they can integrate their applications really easily, or they can take one of our reference applications and run with them. We have also been working a lot on building nodes around the world and making sure that our system is completely reliable for this type of media management. But also, this coming year, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be embedding our system or our storage cloud computing platform inside of the enterprise, whether this is through virtual compute partnerships or software as a service partnerships. Mm-hmm. If you think about in the case of data protection, the window for adding online backup to your traditional backup applications is closing rapidly. I mean, this was a key leading edge feature last year. This year is mainstream. It's a must have. If you don't have it, you're not a backup player. So for example, we're an extremely good partner for any backup provider that wants to add online storage to their application.
Right. Let's shift over to Jim, who's going to give us a little different perspective. Box.net is also, in the broad sense, providing online storage, but quite a different model. So
this is true.
Why don't you give us a little intro, Jim, and some of your thoughts on, sure, on what's happening next.
Sure. Box.net is a file storage and sharing tool. And the company really got itself started in the consumer side of, as a web application for consumers. So it's a place to park any type of file or file agnostic. You then have tools to share files with friends and whatnot. So about a year and a half ago, we got into providing these types of services for businesses. And we really started to bridge the idea that businesses need to collaborate with partners, clients, suppliers, vendors, these types of folks, where the right permission levels are in place, and we're basically enabling collaboration. So collaboration is really what we define ourselves as today. I'm responsible for the enterprise side of the business. So this is a tool set that scales into companies with seats. So each person who has a seat gets a Box account. You have a login to an account where you park your files. You can share folders with other folks who have Boxes. That can happen internal to your enterprise or external to your enterprise. And again, those sort of sub-users are these permission-based logins with variable permissions for outside people. So it is online file storage, it's online file sharing, it's collaboration. The company's growing like a weed. On a certain level, we are online storage, but I guess as an aspirational statement, we really do want to view ourselves as a file system of the web. So for one of the key differentiators for Box.net, when you compare us to folks like, for example, Emoji, they're more pure file storage backup. We really don't position ourselves as backup at all. It's more of a collaborative tool set. And we have what we call our Open Box initiative. We've added a whole series of services that you can put on top of the files that you have inside your box, and it allows you to be more productive at the end of the day. And again, this is true for both consumers and business users. We have online file editing. We have version tracking inside of our application. You can send a fax for free from our application. You can get a digital preview of any type of document without having to download. We have a lot of things like that that give you more services on top of just raw storage, or even more, you know, more deeply in terms of collaboration tools.
So the main thing that I get is, you know, we spend a lot of time in companies emailing around documents or putting them on the corporate server and then making copies, and you get this just proliferation of very poor efficiency and, you know, what haphazard communications tools. Well, it's better than when we didn't have email, but you know, I'm not sure that we're necessarily making the best use of the medium now. And so that's a big part, I guess, of what Box.
Yeah, a lot of people that come to us, they're having issues with FTP. They need to get files back and forth between, again, like, you know, contractors, suppliers, vendors, whatnot.
Sure.
You know, FTP is cumbersome. File ownership over time is unclear. End users find it complex, and, you know, if they're not relatively computer savvy, they have real challenges with it. And using email for large file attachments for collaboration, well, there's a lot of anti-spam programs out there that will prevent you from doing that, and you won't even know that you're not collaborating. Yeah, those are some concrete challenges that lead companies to come to Box.net and do business with us today.
Great. So what's next? What do we have to tackle as an industry, and what topics should we think about covering going forward as we explore this in more detail?
Well, I certainly think that the next year, 2 years, you're going to see large-scale adoption by much bigger companies. And that's going to mean that companies like Box.net and Nervonix, we've figured out SLAs. It means we've gotten some good reference clients in place. It means that we'll have, you know, a few more years, a couple more years under our belt. So we'll be, you know, being able to put forward some growth that people can trust. You know, it's a whole trust factor on a certain level. You know, companies are going to be smart when it comes to things around their data. They're not going to do things willy-nilly. They're going to insist on good security. They're going to insist that solid vendors are chosen for the services that they decide to outsource. I don't think anybody doubts the fact that the outsourcing is occurring, that cloud computing is here, and Salesforce.com has been around for a while. Your sales leads have been out there. You know, your email marketing customer list is out there in the cloud today. It's an evolution, like Steve was saying before. So that's really what I see. I see much larger adoption.
That reminds me of one question I wanted to ask both you, Jim, and Edgar. When you're talking with customers, how much of the sales engagement process is focused on the advantages of having the information accessible and manageable in the cloud? And how much of it is just customers looking at the cost of what it's going to cost internally versus externally? I mean, is it more of a functionality and that type of sale, or is it more of a just we can do it cheaper than you can ever attempt to do it yourself?
I think it's 50-50. I think the conversation started, the foot in the door is the cost component, but I think once you're in there and you start talking about what the technology is and what it allows you to do, then the light bulb goes on and you can talk about the possibilities of, you know, if this data was not inside of data center, you know, as a prisoner, but it was shared and the people that want to consume it can consume it under the right permissions, I think the you know, you have a lot of possibilities. And the one of the advantages of cloud computing is that, you know, if you're playing options trading, it does lower your cost of testing an option or a possibility or an experiment. So it does allow that, you know, lower the cost, the return is the same, you risk is constant, but the cost of exploring this option is much lower. So you see people having these sandboxes. You can start with Nervonix with, you know, pennies testing or a full-fledged API, the full scalability of the offering, nodes around the globe, and you're still paying pennies per gigabyte. So therefore, this allows people to experiment a lot more and explore the possibilities.
With Box.net, we come from a Web 2.0 background, so extreme ease of use is one of our calling cards. That resonates with companies to be able to say that, you know, you're not going to need to necessarily train the people that are going to use our tool is a very powerful statement. You know, the tools do what they're purported to do. You can collaborate with people. You can do all kinds of cool stuff with your files online. Employees, you know, they're now used to flexibility, being able to work from home. You know, sales teams, remote sales teams who work remotely, they have to have access to their data. So there's a flexibility piece, there's an affordability piece, there's a simplicity piece. I think all of them sort of really, you know, are making companies open their eyes and say, hey, you know, these things really deserve a serious look. They're just far easier to provision and far easier to make sure that when you make the minimal investment in the technology, that people are going to be able to actually pick it up and run with it and use it to the benefit of your company.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, if you look at kind of where we are from a cloud computing industry perspective, if you can actually put those words together and it makes sense, you know, it's interesting to see. I mean, as Jim was alluding to, companies already, whether they're realizing it or not, have already made a lot of these moves. Whether they've put their CRM list in there, they've already moved critical pieces of data into the cloud, whether it's email marketing, etc. And so, to me, you know, as we kind of look forward, you know, this is, I think it's already a kind of a foregone conclusion that the industry is going that way. It's just really how quickly people are going to move, and that really becomes down to whether all of the providers can establish the level of trust with the model. You know, outages like what Amazon has, it takes a step back from the industry perspective because it casts a an issue on things like reliability. That said, I think that clearly the forward momentum here, you know, kind of takes you to ultimately, you know, the pragmatists and even some of the, you know, later adopters are looking very heavily at outsourcing large portions of their infrastructure and going this way. And I think that's what you're going to see over the next couple of years.
Great. Yeah, well, I think the most interesting part is that while there are amazing things happening with the cloud infrastructure and the technology that supports all of this on the back end, so to speak, there's also this great amount of functionality on the front end for consumers and, you know, people in their day-to-day work activities, professional activities. So, you know, for me, when I think about cloud computing, I coming from an industry perspective, I think about the data center aspect. But then as a user of many of these type of technologies, I've tried out Google Docs and, you know, a whole slew of other things. There's a lot of excitement there. So I want to make sure that in future episodes, we talk a little bit about both sides of the equation, because they provide, you know, an equal amount of interesting things to talk about. Great. Any other final comments before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I'd suggest that I'm quite enthused to be part of all of this kind of stuff. There's clearly opportunity out there for companies like Box.net, companies like Neuronix, companies like Gear 6. It's a lot of fun. It moves fast, and you know, it feels like we're at the beginning of the ride. So it's great to be part of it.
Yeah. In terms of closing, I do want to mention cloud computing, and in particular cloud storage, has, like we said, a lot of disruptive elements and a lot of evolutionary elements. One of our customers, for example, created an application in Facebook. And we have leveled the playing field for that application to be basically the YouTube of Facebook, with minimal investment, three people in a room leveraging our cloud storage platform. That's on the Web 2.0 side. On the enterprise side, we've allowed application developers to enhance their offerings with online backup, and that's kind of the evolutionary side versus the disruptive side. So cloud computing, cloud storage is disruptive. It's also evolutionary, and it's definitely changing the game.
I mean, I think that ultimately, it's like Mark Andreessen described it, we are now into this laptop startup phase, where like every company that's now being creative, it's they just buy laptops. They don't buy actual hard assets, and they look to ultimately outsource as much as they can in the cloud. And if those are the companies that are being formed right now, imagine what the landscape's going to look 5-10 years from now when those companies actually grow up and become large public companies and whatnot. It's going to be all virtual.
My iPhone made me millions.
And we used to talk about virtual companies by, you know, having a home office and faxing and telephoning to each other, but we're really changing the definition of what a virtual company is now.
But if you think about these companies have a choice, right? If they go raise money or they have a project budget, whatever, $2 million, $20 million, they're not going to go the traditional way and spend $20 million on boxes and gears. And
who's going to buy the EMC Symmetrics?
I don't know. So I think they're using the web OS in the form of computing platforms, of storage platforms that live in the cloud.
Great. Well, thanks very much for listening today and following our first Cloud Computing Roundtable. For more information, please stay tuned. We'll currently be using the Gear 6 company blog, thoughtput.com, as a posting repository. And if you'd like to email us with comments or questions or ideas and suggestions for future episodes, please email us at thoughtput, thoughtput, at gear6.com. Thanks again for listening today, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.